Recording.
Okay. And welcome to the Zoom people.
Recording
and to the
in progress.
People. Oh, we got to hit that button, the recording in process button.
I think they just did.
Yeah, no, but we get if you want to get rid of that window.
Oh, sure.
Okay, yeah. I'm going to see if mine's going. Okay. I'm as blind as a bat, so whoever wants to get comfortable for distance in the Zoom world, feel free to have your camera on or off. And are we okay with sound-wise? And sound-wise in Zoom land? Okay, perfect. Okay, so here we go. So I'm just going to do a little bit. The arrangement's a little bit different, so I'm not. So my topic is, I guess, carrying on from the theme loosely from our Mountains and Waters retreat, which was around tending the garden. But if anybody knows me at all, you know I don't tend a garden at all very well. But what I do tend to is toward anything with whiskers, furs, or feathers. So I kind of reside more in the bird world a lot of the time, and you'll probably hear me talk about that a lot. So, and what I'm basing this talk on, and I'm actually dedicating, I guess, to my Jukai Dharma sister, Red Sarah, or Sarah Ross, because she's the one who kind of got me on this book that's called What the Robin Knows: How Birds Reveal the Secrets of the Natural World. And when I started reading this book, because I was taking a little mini course with her about bird language, and I got this book and I started reading it, it was sort of like what Kate talked about. You sometimes come across accidental Dharma books, and I'm like going, holy crap, this is like a total Dharma book, right? So I kind of decided I was going to work it into, you know, and figure out a way. And I think I have, using what, this is a book by John Young, what he teaches about learning bird language, what it's telling you as a metaphor, right? And, but some of it's not so metaphor, and you'll see as we go along here. I'm a little blind here somewhere. But yeah, such a real true Dharma book. So, and so the question began with me on, you know, and correlating with what John was saying. And very early on, a couple of the things that he talks about and by what the book is about is thus, my main two subjects in this book: what's really going on in the world of birds, and how can we access that world through our awareness of deep bird language so we can see more wildlife? And I'm like, or what's really going on in the world of Key? How can I access that world, and how can I access the awareness of deep awareness so I can see more completely or fully? You know, so, and I think, well, that's kind of like our Zen practice. We come to meditate, we come to learn teachings, we come to be involved in community. But what's the true bare bones of what we're trying to do? We're trying to relieve ourselves of suffering. But how do we do that? We really need to get to know ourselves and examine that very closely. And so when he talks, when Jung talks in his book about, you know, am I going to be a bird whisperer? Not really, but I listen to the whispers, the songs, the companions' calls, and the alarms. And that's kind of what we're doing, at least in my opinion, is what we're trying to do on our cushion, is listening to what's being said to us in our body and our mind. And then, of course, like, where do we start? Right here, you know. So we continue here, and he starts with, you know, how do we start, you know, this study and of getting to know birds and bird language. And he says, when he introduces it, the usual response is, you know, John, I can't even identify different birds. How can I even go further to use their songs to figure out their territories, etc.? It's like, and then I think, I can't even figure out what my monkey mind is trying to tell me, let alone, you know, anything about baselines of territory or anything else, you know. And his response, these are quotes, my answer, practice. The only talent required is motivated practice. For the deepest learning and achievement to happen, the deepest visceral connection with the subject is necessary. In education, sparking this connection is the primary goal. The learning follows. So to look at bird culture, I'm saying study yourself, he suggests you look at it like an anthropologist does. And noting that every living being has a purpose, a mission, a life strategy, a set of gifts, and a set of weaknesses. And then I would suggest, I'm putting in my words, just like our feathered friends, and then he says, there's nothing random about birds' awareness and behavior. They have too much at stake, life and death. Ringing a horn, maybe, you know, like... So, like, you know, like I said, I'm telling you, I'm like, holy crap, and I'm not even up to chapter one yet. Okay, you know, so I'm just like, I love this guy. I absolutely love this guy, and I love the working of it. So in his education with young people and anybody that wants to learn more about birds and their language, he suggests that you start with the familiar, like your backyard, like... who's familiar and who's around you already. And of course, and I'm not much of a Zen quoter, but I will hear, you know, why leave behind the seat that exists in your home and go aimlessly off to the dusty realms of other lands? And it's like, yeah, maybe you learn your foundation in your backyard or down the street or wherever it is. And then for him, to learn all of this, the sit spot is where the entire meal is laid out for us. So his suggestions should sound familiar. It should be a place that's easy and convenient and accessible. A place that you could go to on perhaps a daily basis. And that it could be anywhere, just as long as it works for you. And that it's a conducive environment. So probably not a parking lot. Then again, depends, you know, but, you know, maybe like a zendo or a quiet spot in your bedroom. In the bird world, you might bring along binoculars, journals, other sit spot gear. In our world, we bring our cushions, our benches, our pads, our loose clothing, our body, our posture, whatever it is that we need to make that spot conducive so that we can start. And then we turn toward our senses, we come to our spot, we turn toward our body, and we turn toward our mind. And again, I'm not making, he talks here about arriving to his sit spot. And he's like, the main idea is not to hear birds, the main idea is to hear everything. And then using your ears like radar. Silence itself is a sound, and listening to it is good. And then as you're seeing and hearing your sit spot, you're also sitting on the ground or in a chair, or maybe leaning against a tree, and your hands are touching something. What? Feel it. Our skin is the largest organ of our body for a reason. Use it. Is the ground cold? Is it a rock or a piece of bark poking at you? Any part of your body crying for attention? What's the feeling in your shoes, the feeling of the ground beneath your feet? Can you feel moisture? Is the sun shining on your face? Can you feel its heat? Feel the wind? And so on, which of course, if you guys have been kind of watching me at all, were some of the practice that I do in sort of my alternative yoga world is the centering practice and sense awareness and touching in and tuning in, not just with your head, but what's all going around and using all of your sense organs. So obviously for him, it's actually a little more, it's less metaphorical than it is for us. But I, again, love some of his things. So he talks about engaging your owl vision in this wide angle view of what's going on and your perception of what's happening. And for us, that probably is not so literal, but you know, in your space. And talks about deer hearing, and and that's those sensitive little ears, how they kind of prick and notice and hear. And we do it too. We just might not tune into it the same way, but we do it on our cushions, and we'll sense and be aware if we're tuning into that part of our sensations and the physicality. And looking toward the subtle. And then in my other that he talks about is raccoon touch and the feeling. It's like raccoons and rats have like this like huge number of sense organs in their paws, right? But and he was talking about them washing and stuff, but it's the same thing. You can extend that to your body and your raccoon touch on where are you grounding into the surface. And I think this stuff is gold. And for him, if you awaken all of your senses, the connections happen faster, the understanding is richer, and your bird language experience becomes more and more compelling. So, and then again, if we're in bird language mode, however, we're moving it with a whole different frame of mind and venturing into another realm of awareness, intention, and curiosity. We're holding multiple questions in mind simultaneous. We're not focused on a single species. We're monitoring several species consciously and perhaps quite a few others unconsciously. We don't have hunting intentions. We have diffuse awareness, curiosity, perceptions, and questions. We're always aware of the ripples that we are creating as we go. So the sit spot extends into how we start establishing our baseline and learning the environment. Quite simply, baseline is the background, again, which everything plays out. It's fundamentally about recognizing patterns and identifying and understanding the disturbances within these patterns. To identify the disturbances, we first have to understand the patterns. So in his world, it's creeping, crawling, hopping, grazing, prowling, barking, chattering, grunting, whinnying, and singing. All part of the intricately woven tapestry of the preferred status quo, and every creature adds its particular contribution to this baseline symphony. We learn in the great concert hall. So for him, it's nature, our sit spot. For us, it's the zendo. And in the seat in the hall is the sit spot or the cushion. In its simplest terms, baseline is the daily routine without danger. We'll talk about that later. But the daily routine, it can be quiet and peaceful and lazy or active or even times raucous. It's always dynamic. And I would suggest for me, the extension was around our daily state of emotions, feelings, and state of being, which of course, they're our baseline, but that doesn't mean we're exactly the same on every given day or moment. Back to Jung, every species has a distinctive mode for every time of day, every ecological niche, every seasons. Generalizations about baselines may be necessary, but always subject to modification. So to explore more about how he teaches about learning bird language, he lists five types of conversations or categories. He talks about songs, he talks about companion calls, territorial aggression, adolescent begging, and alarm. And I'm going to go into that a little bit more and do my own twist on it and change. But the other concept that he brings in, and it was a little tricky to find the right spot for this, but he talks about the concept of bird plowing. And this is basically the effect that you have on the bird world. So, and it's one of these things where little pet peeve of mine, you go for, you know, bird watching with people and they're yakking and they got the dog and then they wonder why there's no birds, right? Because there's a sphere of the birds are going, gah! And they all take off, right? And he talks about how we're jarring unaware a lot of times about our presence. about that. And I got thinking about, like, you know, the same kind of concept of, you know, what bird plow do we bring into the world just as we're traveling and moving through? Or what bird plow are we bringing in, like, say, when we come to the Zendo? You know, like, we, you know, and it's not a judgment thing, but it's more of, like, you know, coming in hurried, coming in with the work stuff, coming in with, you know, all of the woes, you know, on there. And then I think, and I would speak from personal, sometimes I don't get past my plow. Like, I get to my cushion and I'm still plowing. So I'm not even got to sensations or whatever, you know, on what's going on. But then I got thinking, oh, that's such the beauty of our Zendo, because, well, gee, you might come in with that plow, and then what we do, we kind of carefully ask you to sit in your seat, and we get the horn going, and we get the bell, you know, and then it's like, well, and that's in a way that kind of helps maybe just bring down that energy and bring down that chill, you know, to that maybe when you get settled into your cushion, your plow won't be so active. Or that what we're talking about here, you know, is bringing a mindfulness in how, metaphorically, how you walk through the bushes, you know, it's more like tracker, very quiet mode. Can you maybe do that with your mind as you come in to help settle? Maybe, maybe not, but, you know, you know, that skill will develop, and the more of that skill and shaking up, you might not shake up your world so much. So anyhow, so back to the voices. And I kind of reversed them. So I'm going to talk about them from backwards, from alarm, begging, aggression, companion to song. Because I think, for me, they're the more coarser. And then it kind of defines down to the finer. So see what I do with that. So the first alarm, and I've kind of used that metaphor, and these are those little voices that are, you're kind of talking between your mind and your body and reactions, and they can come from a lot of different places. And so certainly alarm, we know that, and this is what he says, to better understand the baseline for any given species, the better we understand the disruption signaled by alarms. That's cry of surprise or, you know, warning. And we know that's one of our survival modes on, you know, producing, you know, calling out as part of the, you know, gathering and flight, fright, fees. And we also know that it's necessary. It's not like it's all made up. Like, it's, you know, if there's a fire, we got to go, right? You know, and we're kind of moving through that. But unfortunately for humans, we have this tendency to stay sometimes in those habit patterns. And for some of us, we've had overactivated sympathetic nervous systems and vagal maladaptions. And that we've got alarm bells ringing off all the time. He says in his thing, this line that stood out for me, sometimes it's a silent alarm, with the silence so deep we can actually feel it. Almost once, it's at once intangible and unmistakable. And I'm like, if anybody's done any body work, you know exactly what that is. It's this disturbance that you might not be able to define, but you know what it is, right? So I'm suggesting our human alarms, they go on the range of being very accurate to, in the range of grainy to subtle. So we'll have ones that, the internal ones that perhaps are not as helpful, like panic attacks or extreme aversions to situations, or even down to, like I said, the subtle, where there's a sense of tightness or something in your chest or your throat, or us missing the connection that this sensation is actually tied into anxiety or insecurity. So we know that they're there for a purpose. And then his chapter actually is like, there's an alarm for every occasion. And I would suggest that humans have alarms for every contingent and situation. But like I said, you know, it's reasonable to assume that probably bird families may not have the same emotionally imbalanced family dynamics that humans might have, you know, and they're pretty much on or off, right, you know, on that, and then they go. So I think with practice, that's one of the first sounds, like I think maybe a lot of people do listen to. I speak for myself, you know, throat tightness and anxiety, and maybe, you know, correlating what that was doing, you know, on an old habit pattern that was very fear based, but learning that, like, okay, that's not a useful alarm. I don't need to reintroduce that, but I have to learn to sit with it. And that we can listen and respond to our internal and external alarms, you know, to see what's happening without fully engaging ourselves into full-on adrenaline mode. So the next one is adolescent begging. And I thought, oh, don't we know what that one sounds like? I want my food and I want it now, right? And I thought, oh, you know, immature, demanding, entitled, whiny, self-indulgent, perhaps, you know. And then I kind of went, yeah, that's kind of the one, like, if you're changing, like, habits or addictive behaviors, you know, that kind of, it's a survival reaction, not quite like the alarm thing, but, you know, it worked for you and I need it now because I'm feeling bad, you know, that's a baby, or, you know, and if I don't have it, I'm just going to die, right? You know, that kind of sense of whatever that thing that is causing you problems now and not serving you anymore. So it goes past intellectual. It's all, you know, body felt usually, and that's why people are surprised, you know, oh, next thing I knew, my head was in the fridge and half the cake was gone. And they don't know what happened, you know, between that moment and what preceded. And so it's probably, I'm guessing, that little adolescent brain. But I took it a little bit further and I thought, oh, but the other one that can happen is the adolescent begging that's coming externally and more of a parental response. And something's whining and begging, and there might be an automatic tendency to tend, even though it may or may not be appropriate, because like all juveniles, they have to grow up, right? So, you know, and what are you reacting to there, right? So interesting stuff, I think, you know, and it does, you know, the bird and human world, they probably do it too. But I think the birds, again, have a better... I've got some juveniles in my neighborhood, and you know when the parents are totally like, dude, the food is over there, go get it, right? You know, and then eventually... you can see, you know, and they go and pick a bug, you know, and go, and then they go, you know, and they shut the bird up, you know. But, you know, they're very attentive, but eventually it's like, no, you go get it. I've put it close, deal with it, right, you know. And so, and then I've got, I think, one crow juvenile in the neighborhood, and oh my God, it's loud. He just isn't giving up, you know, so, or he, she, I don't know what it is. So the next language is around territorial aggression, and then I went, oh, okay, your analogy's starting to break down here a little bit, but then I went, no, it's not, because it's again, you know, how, you know, looking at what he's thinking, but I'm like, these are kind of the secondary things around, and they're all around love, and mating, and homemaking, and guarding, and acquiring, and protection, right? Those are all those kinds of things that birds do and converse with each other that, again, are within the normal range. And I would suggest that's part of our normal range, too, that we, you know, have our feelings, emotions around bonding, and we might get a little clingy about some of our items or our pattern habits around accumulation or not, you know. So I think that one's sort of a nice in between one of those things on expressing range, like I said, not full on, and probably sits in that camp of everydayness, right? Like we go to work to get money to get food, we drive a car to go here, we would take our bicycle to get to wherever, we meet up with folks, we, you know, fall in love, we break up, you know, people die, people live, all that kind of stuff. And I think that's just actually what's going on. And there's a whole bunch, when you get into the bird, of stuff that's going on there with our communication. So I think possibly Again, less coarse than Alarm, but you know, we're starting to really twiddle down into some of these reactions and what we're feeling. The next one is Companion Calls. And ironically, the author and myself kind of, you know, when you read it, it was like it was his favorite call, type of call. And this is the chatter that goes on between birds, right? And it's not panicky. And he actually like does English, you know, and you know, in the bird world, it's like chip, chip, and chip, chip. And, but what he's, you know, he's saying, you know, what they're kind of saying, you know, are you there? Yes. Are you there? Yeah, I'm here. Don't do that to me. Like, got missing. Sorry. Okay. Everything okay? Fine. Okay, dear. Yes, honey. You still there? Yes, dear. Chip, 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 chip. And I just sort of went, yeah, you know, and I have these northern flickers that talk to each other. And it took me a while to learn that was their companion, because it sounded to me initially, it was like somebody when you take your finger and you rub on a window and there's like, but then you realize, and they're just back and forth. And then you'll kind of, you know, and then they'll, and then you'll hear, oh, okay, there. And then they might fly off. And it's, and it is, it's really sweet and it's very low. He says some people consider this second fiddle to songs, but they are quiet and they're not spectacular, you know, but they do teach about relationship and the conversation of the twittering and the chirping. And so I'm like, yeah, you know, that is that kind of relationship that maybe, you know, you've been sitting for a while, you've got the knee pain out of the way, you know the routine, you settle into your cushion, and there's that beginning of that ease and that comfort where once in a while you can just have this nice little settled conversation with yourself that is more exploratory, right? And again, more day to day, maybe instead of between your ears, it's your body and your mind. And making those connections. And then whatever way, you know, it's that checking in with yourself, reaffirming of yourself, curiosity, mindfulness. And this is where I kind of, this is Michael. What is this? The question to ask. And I think that's when you start to do that question, maybe, as opposed to what is this? You know, you know, maybe. Well, that might be the question too, depending on what stage you're at. So the final one is around songs. And as much as I love this book and everything that was going on, I was actually a little disappointed when he got to this part, because he got very kind of scientific. And it felt a bit cold. He, you know, his description was that songs are for confirming baseline conditions, establishing territory, and that the bird is not worried for its life, establishes the absence of danger. And I'm like, that doesn't sound right to me, you know. So, like that, you know, and then I thought, well, my talk, I can use poetic license. And then I'm like, you know, and I can also put some anthropoization in there too, that, like, really, you think they're singing just for mates or just because they're relaxed? I'm not buying it. You know, I think they sing because they can and they want to, and they're expressing themselves, and we know it's safe, and they love to call out, and it's just like why we sing. We just because it feels good and it fills our hearts, or we like to listen to music. If you're not a very good singer, you know, sometimes it just, well, it might fill your heart, but not somebody else's so much. And that maybe the not worried for its life is our language, that it's our expression of our unique identifiable song that we travel in the world with, that's unfettered and it's pure. And instead of territory, maybe it's how we bring our presence into the world and show to the world our truth, authentic self, and original face. And I get my feeling is more it's around that sense of equanimity and living and embodying all those moments that are indescribable and being fully open and transparent. If I ever meet Mr. Young or Dr. Young, we can talk about it. But I think, but I think he has to be a bit scientific. I've got a couple more points here. The other thing, though, from the bird world that I thought was very useful that he talked about was about this baseline language and how birds are moving in and out with their language and telling you about what's going on in the bird neighborhood. And he's saying that the corollary is also important. The mildest provocation or disturbance will cause almost any bird to stop singing instantly and either maintain silence or broadcast alarm until its sense of safety is restored in relative peace. The significant line that he says to me is the restoration of baseline can be shockingly sudden. And so I was like, yeah, they go through and they're doing this, checking in or whatever, but they don't dwell on it. Like the second it's safe, they come back down to baseline and they carry on. And I'm like, oh, I could learn that, you know, like instead of raging on, like when it's over and on to the next step. So it was just, yeah, I thought this guy was great. So I'm just going to close with, and I hope you hear it. I'm not going to try and explain it, but he talks about this all being a lesson that he, a passage that he got from the San Bushmen. And the San is a group of hunter-gatherers in Botswana and South Africa. They're considered some of the oldest cultures on Earth. And they talk about what you learn and in this terms of thickening the thread. And this is what I would say the analogy is for either the bird world or our Zen practices about this. If one day I see a small bird and recognize it, a thin thread will form between me and that bird. If I just see it but don't really recognize it, there's no thin thread. If I go out tomorrow and see and really recognize that same individual small bird again, the thread will thicken and strengthen just a little. Every time I see and recognize that bird, the thread strengthens. Eventually, it will grow into a string, then a cord, and finally a rope. This is what it means to be a bushman. We make ropes with all aspects of the creation this way. Yes, I thought it was beautiful. And then he extends a little bit from that, that with this kind of study, we go from awareness to appreciation to empathy. Can't say it any better. Don't go. So I'll close. You can take my bird analogy. I'm going to take it, you know, but, and so maybe some questions for your practice to carry with. What does your robin or chickadee or falcon or flicker tell you? And what's your sit spot like? What does your bird plow look like, you know? And what can you do with that? Or what's going on? What's going on with the kind of calls and thoughts? And can you find a category for it? Is it a song or companion? Territorial, adolescent, alarm? I think those are kind of useful. I don't know. They could be useful. That's my offering. Thank you.
Thank you, too.
The earth is a place to a place. With